The Blaze Radio Network. On demand. Glenn Beck.
One of my favorite people in the world is Nick Vujicic. If you have not heard of him, this is going to be a very interesting time for you. Nick is a guy who was born without any arms or legs, hands and feet, and he has a new book out called Be the Hands and Feet. He is one of the more inspiring people I think I have ever met. Hello, Nick. How are you?
Hi, Glenn. So good to see your
face.
Good
to see you.
Love you sitting at this table. Thanks for having me on your radio show.
You're welcome.
Appreciate
so, first of all, let's kind of catch up with you. For anybody who doesn't know you, tell me your story quickly.
Quickly, I was born in Melbourne, Australia, without limbs. Lady Gaga don't know why I was born this way. Many people had their own theories and philosophies of life, including a woman who said that, well, in my previous life, reincarnation, I was a bad boy and now I'm getting punished. But now that I'm a good boy, I'll come back in my next life and be a butterfly. And I'm thinking, she don't know how many butterflies I've killed in my wheelchair. I don't want to be a butterfly. Being isolated at times, very loving home, though. Went to a mainstream school. I was the first disabled child to go to the mainstream school system of Australia in 1989, and was excelling in mathematics because that was the only way that I could compete with everyone. But I really had depression and fears about my future. Attempted suicide at age 10 because of bullying predominantly at school.
Can you tell me how you tried to do that?
Yeah, I went to the bathtub and I told my dad I just want to relax in a bathtub of 4 inches, 5 inches of water, and I turned over to let the breath out. But I couldn't go through with it, not because it was physical limitations, but because I didn't want to leave my parents with that pain, and I pictured my parents crying at my grave, so I did not go through with that by the grace of God.
Tell me the depth there of despair, of losing hope.
You know, it was as if I never had it. It's not about losing hope. It's actually losing all strength to go on just because of the bleak and broken future that I could see ahead. I felt like I was a burden to my parents. I convinced myself I'd never get married, never be happy, never be a father, never find a job, just be a burden to everyone around me. I thought even if I got married, I can't even hold my wife's hand. Even if I had kids, I can't even hold my kids when they're crying. Today, I have my wife. Her name is Kane. She's a rock star. She's a superstar. She's amazing. She's beautiful.
She
6 years of marriage now.
Yeah. I think you had just gotten married last time I saw you.
That's right. Yeah.
And congratulations on your twins.
Thank you, Glenn. Yeah, so we have two boys, Kyoshi and Dayan, 5 and 2.5 years old. And we got now two twin girls, Olivia and Ellie. They're about 10 weeks old right now.
Okay. So,
and I wanted to say this. I don't need to hold my wife's hand. I just need to hold her heart, and you don't need hands for that. And when my boys cry, I can't put my arms around them, but they put their arms around me.
So you were convinced that you would be a burden on everyone. And that's kind of the way the world is working right now, especially with anybody with any kind of disability. We were talking off the air that this is a providential week to have you come in.
It is.
Because I have been truly sleepless in the last few nights about what's happening with the Washington Post coming out saying, you know, if you have Down syndrome, you know, it's very brave to abort them because we're curing Down syndrome.
Goodness gracious.
By killing them. Of course, they're not saying killing, but that's what they mean. They have, you know, the responses are people with Down syndrome have no quality of life, and they're a burden on families. And I think, Nick, quite honestly, if we as a society can embrace killing the most angelic, I mean, the most angelic.
I can't agree with you more.
Then who won't we kill?
You know what? I've been interviewed all week, Glenn. All week. You know I've been on the road.
Yes.
For my book and all that stuff. And the question that you know, because we talk about how when I was in Russia a couple years ago, there was a petition signed because I was famous in Russia overnight preaching the gospel on mainstream TV. And some editor from a publication in Russia said no disabled person should get married, should reproduce, and should ever have a stage and ever be on TV. 90,000 people signed that petition. Mm. and then a million people got angry and that guy got fired. I wonder if this person will ever...
No.
Never. You know never. That. Because, well, it's just an opinion. Well, this other guy also had the opinion. And so the idea here is, well, how many more of these articles will actually be publicized without us actually saying, hey, wait a second, let's really, really analyze this. And it's just unfair.
It's amazing.
It's unfair.
It's amazing to me because...
How are we different from the Russians, Glenn?
We're not.
Everyone's back at the Russians. I'm Yugoslav, and I love the Soviet area, and I love the Slavic region, and they have a lot of improvement coming. Ukraine just changed their law, Glenn, after I spoke to the government, just to let you know. They're allowing special needs children to go to school for the first time. There's improvement over there.
Wow.
But you come home here, and you get so discouraged and stuff like this.
You know, it's remarkable to me that you wouldn't, if we had this, if you would have been seen in utero, you'd be gone. If Stephen Hawking would have been able to be tested in utero, he'd be gone. Stephen Hawking passed away today.
Today. I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. One of the most remarkable men to ever live.
Wow.
And, you know, when you look at the Nazi era, the people who voted for Hitler, think of this. When he started his T4 program to wipe out, would have killed you, would have killed my daughter, would have killed anybody with Down syndrome. When they found out that they were gassing those children, the people who voted for Hitler rose up and said, no more, no more. You can't do that. We're just letting it go. We're not rising up. That's terrifying.
You're right. And there's many fronts on any fight that you can choose, right? And for me, Glenn, you know I'm pro-life. You know I'm all with you. I'll wing you. I'll be your wingman on this. No problem. We'll do whatever we can to do. But the bottom line, though, I understand the opposition in trying, or the challenge, let's say, in trying to convince people of changing their mind. But you know what also gets me just a little bit angry? Other people who actually say we're Christian and we allow 111,000 7.8-year-old children in America still waiting for an adopted home. 100,000 churches spends billions of dollars on buildings, and we're not the hands and feet. We're claiming Jesus as Lord. Do you know how many teenagers, they think they're Christian because they go to church on Sunday, then they tease someone at school on Monday? Mm-hmm. 40% of the reason for teenage suicide in America is because of bullying at school. We really got to do an analysis of ourselves. If we really are the salt and light, there's 400,000 foster kids waiting. And they, anyway, in the foster adoption industry, you know.
We were just talking about this last week. Yeah. Last week, we were talking about how Christians... I don't know what it means to be a Christian anymore, because if this is what it means to be a Christian, it makes literally statistically no difference in the world. I'm not interested in that.
Here's a contrast. Ready? In Islam, in the Quran, they actually say that it's against Allah that you adopt, because you can never love somebody that's not your blood like you love someone that is your blood.
Holy cow.
So how different are we to Islam? Because so many people think, well, how can I love somebody as much as I love my own? And it's not about that. It's just addressing the biggest questions and fears that people have and saying, hey, look, don't just sit and listen to the prosperity gospel from the pews. You know, surrender your life to Jesus. And then guess what happens? The next paragraph. What do you want God to do for you today? Let's believe and I'll stand with you. Are you kidding me? We're not here to receive. We're here to serve. The prosperity gospel will end, Glenn, in 10 years from now when 35% of all jobs in America are taken by robots. How dare any prosperity preaching preacher will talk about prosperity when a third of their men have no job? It's time to realize, stop waiting on God to do something, and God is waiting on you to do something. I'm all for praying for revival in our country, Glenn, a million people trying to gather in Washington, D.C. But what if a million people actually learned how to preach the gospel? And we preach the gospel to 20 people in a day. You can reach the whole country of America in 16 days. Is it really that hard?
No.
It's not.
It's not.
100,000, you know, adoption, is it really that hard?
It's not.
It's not.
I was at a venture capitalist conference, and I had to speak, and it was all Silicon Valley.
Uh-huh.
And guy gets up, and he's an atheist, one of the biggest venture capitalists in the world. And he gets up, and he said, I had news for you. What's coming is a loss of meaning. Hmm. He said, because the unemployment rate, he said, and this is important, I think, for people to understand. We now look at unemployment and say, oh, can we get it close to zero? Silicon Valley, with the way we're working now, they're the opposite. They're saying, let's get it 100% unemployment so you can do what you want to do, which is a noble thing. However, it also removes meaning for a lot of people who find meaning in their jobs. And he said, so we're going to have a lot of meaningless. He said, but you know who's going to be, you know who's going to conquer that? People who have actual faith.
Wow.
Because people who have actual faith find meaning in good works. Is that crazy?
Wow. Wow.
And we're not doing it.
Wow.
And we have to.
Yes.
Because it'll be the only thing. We will be the ones that can lead the world into meaning and into the
hope.
The hope of there is going to be, it's going to be okay.
Yep.
So, Nick.
Glenn, I love you.
I know.
We got to spend more time together, bro.
I know.
I'm out here in Dallas quite a lot. We got a second home here.
I know. You know, you don't ever stop by?
I'm going to stop by.
Yeah. the name of the book is Be the Hands of Feet, Living Out God's Love for All of His Children. I want to talk a little bit more about the book and the your adventures. And we're going to also spend some time on television tonight.
Good.
So make sure you join us. We'll be back in just a second.
Glenn Beck.
So, Nick, let's talk a little bit, because, you know, you talk in your book about how we need to share the gospel. However, I think people, because of what we were just talking about,
yeah,
people are tired of people talking about the gospel because, you know, doesn't make a difference. We're going to church, but we're living a hypocritical life. We're no different than
right.
everybody else.
Right. And so the bottom line is, when me and his evangelists go 68 countries, meet 18 presidents, speak in front of 10 governments, and in front of billionaires to sex slaves and orphans, there are commonalities of why people don't believe in a loving God. And one of them, rightly said, is that I'm not going to become a Christian because I know Christians.
Mm-hmm.
There was a bumper sticker said, "Dear Lord, save me from thy followers."
Yeah.
And you know, it's the truth. That's one of the things. And so that's when we point the finger at ourselves and make sure that how we live shows it. You know, if you're a teenager and you love Jesus, then you're not sexually active until marriage, period, no matter what you feel. And we've got to hand the truth with love and love with the truth. And the bottom line is, when you put God in the throne of your life and you realize his plan and his way is best, and money, drugs, sex, alcohol, pornography, fame and fortune, and where this country is going, where this world is going, we know that the only hope is in Jesus Christ. That's one of the top seven reasons, Glenn, why people don't come to church. Another one is because they think church is a business. The other ones, though...
Can you argue that, though?
You know what? I have the least amount of argument for that point out of seven. Yeah?
Yeah.
And that's why I'm you know, pretty firm to the churches in making sure that the center of ministry isn't your gifts. The center of ministry is the gospel. And I feel like we as Americans are absolutely ignoring the fact that the prosperity gospel started in America and it's absolutely devastated Latin America and Africa. And the pinnacle of growth and beauty in the church of those continents was when the church met the needs of the people.
Isn't that the point? I mean, I have this argument with people all the time, you know, about faith and works. No, all I have to do is have faith in Jesus and then I'm saved. Okay, I got it. However, You can't tell me that you've been saved if your works aren't his works.
That's right.
If it hasn't changed you in fundamental, easy ways of the way you live your life, then sorry, you don't really buy into it.
Yeah, I tell the teenagers, if you tease someone at school on Monday, I don't think you're a Christian because you have no idea what the love of God is. You know, and so the other things that I write about in my Be the Hands and Feet book is, how do you talk to somebody who's an atheist who says, well, science explains everything? And I, you know, present the points where witchcraft, voodoo, black magic, science can't explain it, but man, it's real. And I'm not an atheist because I've seen an angel. I'm not an atheist because I've seen demons. And so when you realize how you can actually come back with knowledge and points in saying, well, how can a loving God let pain be in the world? There's a simple explanation for it. And people don't share about their faith because they don't know the answers to the top six and most common questions that people have.
We're gonna cover these tonight on TV at 5 o'clock. But I want to ask you this. If there's a God in the world, Nick, how could he possibly let a child be born without arms and legs and go through what you went through as a child?
Well, first of all, I want to say that I believe it's worse being in a broken home than having no arms and legs. Let's just get that straight. Number one, we can't compare each other's brokenness. Number two, though, we know that sickness, disease, and death and uncomfortability to our existence didn't happen until sin came into the world. And that's when people say, well, then why did God allow the serpent in the Garden of Eden? And the answer is very simple. How unfair God would be to make Adam and Eve with free choice, yet never let them hear anybody else but his voice. If he never allowed the serpent in the Garden of Eden to actually say the contrary to what God said, then do they really have free choice or not? Mm-hmm. Therein they chose. And we know that there is a lion devouring, killing, destroying, and his name is Satan, and he knows his days are numbered. And he's going around and destroying the world. And the bottom line, the Bible says, Glenn, very clear, black and white. We know that Jesus is coming back when all the gospel has been preached to all the four corners of the earth. And when I was in front of Billy Graham in 2011, he said, Nick, we don't have to preach down other religions, just preach the gospel. The gospel is powerful enough. And Bible says, my people perish because they don't have knowledge. I also think it's Christians who are losing their faith because they don't grow in knowledge. They think, well, now I'm a Christian and now, you know, God's going to bless me and that's it. No, are you serious? It's about us being on the front line of God's army, ambassadors, the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, and I'm a man without arms and legs, being the hands and feet of Jesus, standing in front of the gates of hell and redirecting traffic. If God can use a man without arms and legs to be his hands and feet, God can use any willing heart.
Kind of have this answer down.
I love you.
I'm so glad that you're here, especially, you know, this week where we've been talking about Down syndrome, and on the day that we mark the life of an exceptional man of Stephen Hawking. And you know, I see God's blessings and glory. Not that he wants anybody to suffer, but I see his glory through Stephen Hawking. He was wasting his life until he realized, I may not have very much time, and it changed him fundamentally. How it changes us is up to us. We'll talk some more this afternoon on The Blaze TV. The name of the book, Be the Hands and Feet, Living Out God's Love for All of His Children.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I got to tell you, I one of my favorite guests is Nick Vujicic. I think he is. Does he make you feel like you know, I mean, here's a guy who has no arms and no legs, and I mean, I bet he exercises more than I do. He's in better shape than I am. And,
well, has he ever exercised? Because then, yes, he's exercised more than you do.
And he's just, he's so inspiring. If, I mean, if you think you can't do it, have you met Nick? I mean, it's just, it's amazing what people can do when they put their minds to it, and they partner with a, with a higher power. By the way, he's going to be speaking tonight in Dallas at the Fellowship Bible Church. That's a 9330 North Central Expressway. Just go to fellowshipdallas.org. He's going to speak at 7 o'clock tonight, fellowshipdallas.org. He is remarkable as a speaker, one of the most powerful speakers that you'll hear. All right, let's talk a little bit about what happened in Pennsylvania last night.
Yeah, a special election, and it is very close. They haven't actually, I mean, we don't know for sure who's won yet. The Democrat in the race has a lead of, I think it's like 500 or 600 votes. Mm-hmm. It's very close. And they still have a few votes to count, though it looks highly unlikely there's enough to count that the Republican would come back and win. That being said,
how many dead people voted?
I don't know. That's going to be calculated later.
I like to know male, female, dead. That's what I'd like to
you
break it out.
You skipped like 90 genders there. When
I know.
You said
I'm
that.
Sorry.
That
I'm sorry. Rude. I'm sorry.
But, you know, who wins is sort of lesser importance here. First of all, they're redoing all these districts anyway. They're redrawing them. So whoever wins here will only hold the job until November. So it's not that big of a deal as of, you know, of who wins. It's one vote and it's going to expire very soon.
But
it's, you know, the bigger point here is there's a large trend going on. This is not a one-off election. What we're seeing here are districts won by Donald Trump by large margins are becoming competitive here. And, you know, every midterm sucks for the president. I mean, it's a long-term rule that, you know, the party of the president that is in power has a really tough time in these midterm elections.
Because I think as people, we like the balance of power. We like to keep the person in check.
Yeah, we kind of push back. I mean, this happened, if you remember, with Obama, the Tea Party.
It happened with Bush, too, didn't it?
Yeah, if you go back. So if you kind of go back and look at how far this has gone, I mean, in 2014... was a wave election for Republicans with Barack Obama as president coming off his 2012 win. 2010 was the Tea Party wave coming off of Barack Obama's first win. 2006, off of Bush's reelection, was a huge wave for Democrats. 1998, I'm going to go back to 2002 here in a second. 1998 and 1994 follow that same pattern. 2002 is the only exception.
That's September 11th.
It was right after September 11th.
Yeah,
where, you know,
that
Bush
was a year
had
later.
Bush had hit an 81% approval rating at one point. Among Democrats, George W. Bush.
Think of that.
An 81% approval rating among Democrats. That's how much we came together after 9/11.
Can I tell you something, though? I mean, maybe it's just me. You know, there is something to be said about, you know, coming together at, you know, a time of crisis, et cetera, et cetera. But we had low expectations for George W. Bush. He was kind of this goofy guy that you're like, okay, well, yeah, I know. He ran a baseball team and his dad was president. You kind of had low expectations for him. And when he stepped up on 9/11, he was the man.
Yeah.
I mean, he handled that flawlessly, at least in the public. You can disagree with his policies,
yeah,
but his first year, he was the leader.
Yeah. And everyone pretty much agreed on that for a while. A lot of that was just a statement, I think, of patriotism in a way.
Yeah.
Of people just saying, look, I mean, look, we're under attack here.
Yeah.
But
although I don't remember having to say or hearing anyone say, oh, you're against the president. Well, then you're against America. You're a traitor.
Yeah.
I don't remember. There was no.
That was a big left. You know, like a lot of people on the left said that. Like, I'm tired. I remember the Hillary thing.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
tired of people saying that if you disagree with this president, you're not patriotic. And that whole thing, that voice thing that she did.
I loved it.
Worked really well for her,
yeah,
by the way.
But it made me think, I don't want Indians from India to be successful. You know what I mean?
No, I don't.
When I heard
no,
that.
Nor
and
does
I thought,
anyone else.
That will make black people have like voting rights and things like that. And so it didn't work for me because that's what I thought of every time I heard that.
It's amazing about that. You're referring to the recent comments by Hillary Clinton while she was in India, and that makes you upset, right? Like it annoys you, right? Mm-hmm. You're angry maybe about her saying those things about you. You know who's more angry about it?
Democrats.
They want her to go inside of a hermetically sealed, cavern somewhere
hide.
Just hide forever is what they want, because they think, I mean, and look, they've got some good evidence to back this up. If you have one special election, you can very easily say, well, that candidate sucked. This is a weird district, you know, whatever. What you're seeing so far is there's been 8 special elections since Donald Trump took over. Okay, and you can blame this on a million things, but I'm just saying that's the time period. 8 special elections. Here are the results, the swing from Donald Trump's vote and the partisan lean to what we saw in the special elections. Plus 18 for Democrats, plus 23 for Democrats, plus 16 for Democrats, plus 6 for Democrats, plus 16 for Democrats, plus 3 for Democrats, plus 31 for Democrats, and plus 22 for Democrats. They've improved their standing in every single race by an average of about 17 points. Now, there has not been, if you look back at the average swing in these midterm elections, there's nothing, the only one that's even close to that is 2006, where the Democrats improved their standing by 15 points. But as we just noted, that was in comparison to the election right after September 11th. So the Republicans held a lot more seats than they would have normally been expected to hold in a midterm election because of that aftermath of September 11th. And so the improvement in 2006 was more dramatic for Democrats. This is still less than what we've seen so far on average with these special elections. It does not mean that this is going to for sure, you know, a lot can change in a year. But Republicans are really freaking out. Doesn't matter who wins that election, really. It's about, you know, 6 months of voting in one seat. It's not that big of a deal. I mean, you know, it really isn't. The big deal there is that this pattern is become very consistent in these special elections. And Republicans, they're talking about now this is going to potentially affect people retiring. We've already seen an almost record number of retirements. And you're talking about people who are promising candidates who will say, maybe I'll skip this one and come back next time. And you're in a real danger of losing the House. The Senate is... The map is so strongly favored to Republicans, it would take a mega disaster for them to lose the Senate. But the House is really in danger at this point. You know, this is a district, if you don't know it, that was a 20-point victory for Donald Trump. But it wasn't just a Trump district. It was a 17-point victory for Mitt Romney against Barack Obama, who was a much stronger candidate than Hillary Clinton. I mean, they ran against each other. We all found that out. And this is a 22-point swing in just a year. So you can look at this, I think, fairly and say, well, it doesn't mean for sure Republicans are going to lose. They still have a chance. A lot of things can happen. But 2 things you should point out here. Number one, you have to realize this is you're in trouble here. If you are the Republicans and you want to hold the House, and again, this means you're talking potential impeachment talk. You're talking all sorts of things can happen if you lose that House. They'll go after him. They'll go after Trump immediately. Not to mention you won't get anything passed. So that is number one. Realize that the House is legitimately
in trouble.
And that is it's not a minor thing. It's a big thing. And so, number two, if I may quickly.
Yeah.
Treat this year as if LeBron James just told you he's going to retire. And you're the Cavs, and you're thinking to yourself, we better go get every free agent and try to do everything this year, because next year we're going to win 5 games. This, you have another, what is it? It's March. You've got 8 months to get anything done that you have the chance to get done. You should treat it that way. Maybe you'll win the House and hold on to it. But you should treat the next 8 months as if it is your utter maximum priority to get everything done that you think you can get done. Because you very well may lose the opportunity to get anything passed in eight months. And then I guess you have until they get seated. So 10 months. This is you do not have a big window here. This is legitimately in danger of going away. So the more you screw around with the little controversies, the more you screw around with, you know, with everybody fighting with each other, that is just eating away at your time to actually get something passed. And that is mostly a conversation to have, not with the president, but with the House. You better start passing things.
Okay, so will you do me a favor? And I'd like you to look at the stats and tell me where those swings are. If you're starting to see more of the old-style conservative Democrat, blue dog Democrat, is that starting to pop up at all?
This is one of the things they're talking about in this election, and that Republicans' defense here is that Conor Lamb, the Democrat, he was basically just a Republican. The guy ran as a Republican. I mean, he's just a Republican, and of course they won. I mean, like, you tell me, is this a, I don't know what a Republican is anymore, so I'll start with that. I have no freaking idea. But the guy was against the tax cuts, said they were a big giveaway to the wealthy. He's for new gun laws like that go further than Manchin Toomey. He calls himself pro gun, and you know, he has that. He didn't come out as like Bernie Sanders actually used to be pro gun. He didn't come out as Nancy Pelosi on guns, right? He came out as like, you know, I'm a sensible Democrat. We need new restrictions, but you know, universal background checks. Further than Manchin Toomey went. He supports the tariffs. Now again, I don't know if that's a Republican position. I guess it is now. I don't know. He's pro choice. And he is against not only just pro-choice, but against the 20-week abortion ban. So it's not like, I mean, 20-week abortion ban.
Moderate.
You're talking 75% of Americans agree with a 20-week abortion ban. So the idea that this guy is some Republican they ran in this district is bullcrap. It's bullcrap. Donald Trump won some Democrats, you know, in these Rust Belt states. But again, Mitt Romney won by basically the same margin. This was not like a big, you know, union victory for Donald Trump in this district. And again, he was also super pro-union, this guy, this candidate. So you telling me that's a Republican? I don't think so. That is just a huge move. Again, elections are largely exercises in feelings. It's how people feel. These policies mean less and less every single time we go to the booth.
And I think if they feel that this is a common sense Democrat, the policies don't matter.
Glenn Beck.
So Facebook comments on today's program, just to wrap up, Janet McClellan wrote in and said, you know, people are saying that they're forbidding students their exercise of their free First Amendment rights. They're forbidding them to leave class. There's a big difference. The protest is scheduled to take place on a school day during hours that the students are required to be in class. Any other school day or time would be perfectly fine. And I love this. This is from Michelle. They should hold the protest on Saturday or after school hours to see where the feelings from these students about gun control really lie. And it's true. Why is this during school? Why isn't this at 3 o'clock? Why isn't this at 5 o'clock during rush hour? Oh, really clogged things up. Oh, because they're not going to go. A lot of them will. A lot of them won't.
Exactly. You're always going to get increased turnout when you
get out of class.
Yeah, get out of class.
Okay. Do you know the story about the person that won the lottery, and they're saying no. They didn't come forward for a long time. Then they filed a lawsuit and said, I don't want my my likeness or my name used. I don't want anybody to know. And the judge has ruled that they can remain anonymous. This is great from Andrea Baxter, a listener of ours. Andrea Baxter, I feel kind of bad for her, though, because she'll never get to meet her long-lost cousin, Andrea Baxter. You know what this is? You know what this is? This is we may be witnessing the first lottery winner that may end up in 20 years having the cash.
Yes.
You know?
If you're going into it, you know, thinking that way, you probably are going to protect the cash.
Yeah, you're thinking, I don't want to be known. Well, then if you don't want to be known, unless you're going to move, you're not going to live large. You know, you're going to be sensible. This might be the very first lottery winner who we'll all want to know, because they'll be the only ones that, you know, aren't laying in a gutter in 5 years going, I used to be somebody.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.